Hello everyone. To celebrate the launch of my new book, The Galway Connemara, please enjoy this sneak peek of the audiobook edition. You can buy the paperback, hardcover, ebook and audiobook on my website, elainehealybooks.com. The Galway Connemara is inspired by Black Beauty and it follows the life of an Irish Connemara pony called Lear. The story is told in his own words. I hope you like it.
Chapter 2. Our field had a post and rail fence between us and our mothers, but the rest of the field boundary was a large dry stone wall. We would occasionally go to the wall and look out over it, but it was our woolly sheep friends who led us on our exciting adventure beyond the wall. The sheep were moved back into our field soon after we were weaned from our mothers. I discovered they were quite friendly, if a little skittish. At first we tried to play with them, but they would run away from us and bleat. One thing they did like to do, though, was huddle by the wall at the top of the field. Some of them even took to scrubbing themselves on the stone. This was fine until one morning, when they dislodged several of the stones, causing the wall to tumble a little. We quickly jumped away snorting, but the sheep promptly hopped over the little wall and disappeared. Seeing them go, we decided to follow and find out what was on the other side of the wall. Nana was running around shouting at us, but we didn't listen, each of us following the next over the wall with a little hop. Beyond the wall was a trail that wound down the steep slope towards the beach. We followed it and each other, weaving our way through dunes of rough, scrubby grass that was not nearly so nice to eat as the lush green blades that grew in our field. The little beach we found ourselves on seemed enormous at the time, although when I think back to it, it was more a quiet cove than an expansive beach. Curved with soft sand and calm lapping waves, it was the perfect place to play. We cantered around on the sand, rolled in it, tossing the soft grains over our backs. We even waded into the water, snorting at the little waves, and digging in the surf, causing it to splash around. I stuck my mouth in it to drink, but found it salty and raised my head up, shaking it, the water dropping from my lips back to the sea. Erin started to run, racing around on the sand, and soon we were all doing it, darting about and bucking. We were free, really and truly free. We could go anywhere, do anything. I finally felt the yellow soil, or sand as I now know it is, under my hooves, sinking and soft. I lay down and rolled in it, feeling the sand sink into my coat and massage my muscles as I rolled on my back from side to side. I felt the warm water on my body as I splashed in the sea. It was as wonderful a feeling as I thought it would be. It felt like we were there for days, the lazy afternoon hours stretching on and on, but in reality, I think we were out only for a few hours at most. As the sun started to set, Jack arrived, laughing and shaking his head once he had assured himself that we were all there and safe. "This is not your field," he called to us. "Come on, it's supper time." Jack held up a large bucket and rattled it, the sound of food grabbing our attention. The beach was fun, but it wasn't a very good place to find food. My tummy rumbled and I eyed the bucket, thinking of feed and the lush grass of our field. I'm not sure who moved first, but as soon as one of us did, we all went, like one of the waves we had played in that afternoon. We trotted through the sandy dunes towards Jack and that feed bucket. Jack handed out a few handfuls of feed from the pail and then shook it again to keep our attention before walking away along the track, us following him like a train. The wall was still down, but there were some poles and tape laid beside it. We hopped over into the field and followed our human down to the main gate where we were often fed. A few other humans were there, and while we were past our feed, they hurried up to the gap, pushing the poles into the ground and stringing the tape between them to close it. Nana scolded us all for our escapades and warned us not to touch the tape. It was, she said, an electric fence to keep us in and would give us a shock if we touched it. I followed her advice, but Erin did touch the tape and confirmed that it bit her. The sheep returned too the following day, but they were placed in a different field. Shortly after, a few humans stopped by our field too and put a post and wire fence up inside the stone wall boundary, just in case it fell again and we attempted another outing. I think if we had had the chance, we would have too. The beach had been amazing fun, and I know I wasn't the only one who would go up and stare at the cove longingly after that day. I wondered if I'd be able to return to the beach one day. I hoped so. Chapter 3. We spent two idyllic years of our lives in that field together, but none of us ever got back to the beach. I'd often talk with Erin about it, remembering the sounds of the waves up close and how soft the sand was. The others would join in. I remember Shem saying about how good it felt to roll in the sand. Nana would often take us to the ridge at the top of the field, so we could look out at the Galway countryside all around us. She would tell us stories of the beach and the waves that broke on the sand, gently when the weather was calm and thrashing and wild when it was stormy. She said that some of our ancestors had come from the sea. They had crossed it from a land far away called Spain, in a great fleet of ships the humans called an armada. Only the ships had been tossed around in one of the wild storms, and broken apart in the turbulent waters of the coast. Many of the humans and horses had drowned in that sea, but some lucky few, had washed up or swam to shore safely. Nana said that these horses had been taken in by locals and bred with those already there, making us Connemaras, the descendants of survivors. Sometimes I'd stand there alone and stare out at the water, imagining what it was like for those horses. Picturing them in the churning water, finally making their way to the shoreline. Their experience of the Atlantic Ocean was much different from mine. While most of our time was our own, free in our field, we did see some people who came to the yard from time to time. We were all nervous of the strangers that would come to the fields to look at our mothers, Nana, and sometimes even us, but Nana would always explain who they were. Mally was the most nervous. She was the smallest and youngest of us. She would often hide behind me or Delaney, watching as the humans went about their business until she decided it was safe. One of the humans came regularly. He often had a bunch of tools with him that almost sent us all into a meltdown the first time we saw him, especially when he started propping Nana's hoof up on a metal stand and rubbing her hoof with a metal bar. "That is the farrier," Nana explained when she returned. "You'll see him, or a human like him, often enough through your lives. He'll check your hooves for signs of trouble, trim them and put on shoes if you need them. Not all horses need shoes though." "What's a shoe?" I remember my friend Shem, a chestnut filly, asking. "It is a metal plate fitted to your hoof," Nana replied. "Does it hurt?" she asked. "It shouldn't if it is put on correctly," Nana replied. That made me wonder. She said it shouldn't, not that it didn't. The vet was our next most frequent visitor. He was a cheerful older man in a flat cap and a strange white coat. The vets I came to meet later always seemed to be dressed differently than this first medical practitioner, but they were all equally invested in ensuring we were healthy and fit. Nana was very fond of the old man. She said he had saved her life but never did tell us how. Though often when she said it, her eyes would go a little misty, especially when she looked at us all. I was not so pleased with the man when he produced a little thing with a plunger on it that pricked my neck. This, I learnt, was something called a vaccination. It was given, so he said, to build up my immune system to fight some diseases that are dangerous to us horses. I got these regularly from then on. I have no doubt they do help to stop you getting sick. But I still dislike the feel of the needle, and to this day will always nod my head when they are given. I got something called a microchip too. But I did like it when he complimented me though. "Our young Lear here is a fine lad, isn't he?" he would say to Jack. "A perfect example of a Connemara pony. Well balanced, confident, great conformation, fabulous movement and a fantastic attitude," he went on as he patted me. "Friendly and full of energy." "Yes, he's a great pony," Jack agreed, giving my neck a gentle rub. "I almost wish he was the one we were keeping." He glanced at Erin. Erin was different from the rest of us. She belonged to Jack's daughter Amy, a bright, smiling girl who loved all of us and frequently came to fuss over and love us. Nana said Erin's mother belonged to Amy, but that she would soon outgrow her, and so Erin had been bred for her. I didn't understand this at first. I asked Nana to explain, and I remember her looking at me a little sadly. She told me our time together would be short. One day I would grow up and go off with one of the humans to start my life with them. I was worried by what she said. I didn't want to leave Nana and my friends and be taken away. Why, I asked, was Erin so lucky? Why would she get to stay here with Amy and not me? It was the luck of the draw, Nana said. She looked at me with a little worry on her face. We can only hope our lives are good, she said. Erin was larger than me, even though her mother was smaller than mine. I asked Nana about this too, and she snorted in amusement at me. Erin is only half Connemara, she replied. Her father is something else, something bigger, so she is bigger for her young human to ride. What about my father? I remember asking. What was he? You are a full Connemara, she said. Both your father and mother are what they call oversized Connemaras. That's why you are bigger than a lot of the other foals, but smaller than Erin. I didn't like being smaller than Erin, but I took pride in being 100% Connemara. It sounded like it meant something special. Our days passed by in blissful freedom, or what we thought was freedom, as free as anything ever gets in the world, I suppose. We were happy. What more could we ask for, really? We had food, we had space to run and do as we pleased, shelter, and if the weather was cold, extra feed was brought to us. Jack was kind and cheerful, always checking on us and keeping us safe. I look back at him sometimes and realize he was the best sort of human. The kind who tries their best to do what is right for their horses. Maybe they don't get everything right, but they try. Nana, I asked one chilly morning when Jack brought out a giant wheelbarrow full of hay for us. What do we do for the humans, so that they do this for us? They bring us food, trim our hooves, and check our health. We must do something in return. We do, she replied. And if you get a good human, you will go to the ends of the earth for them and back again. Are there good and bad humans? I asked. There is good and bad in everything, Nana replied. And in humans there is much good, much bad, and much ignorance. What does that mean? I asked her. She looked at me kindly. Hopefully you will be one of the lucky ones, and will never find out, she answered me, turning her attention to the pile of hay we had wandered over to.
Thanks for listening. You can buy the paperback, hardcover, ebook, and audiobook on my website at elainehaneybooks.com.